Please join me in prayer. Amen. In last week's sermon, you'll recall I talked a little bit about the impersonal forces that seem to create the chasms that we experience in our lives between each other, even within ourselves. I called them the powers and the principalities. And I said that came out of the book of Ephesians. And I decided that I should probably explain a little bit more about this today, because this idea will come up in my preaching from time to time. Now, I'm a pretty positive guy. I like to preach about hope and love and joy. I hope that's where all my sermons head, where all my sermons end. But I have to confess to you, I have a bit of a fascination, maybe an unhealthy one, with the question of evil. Maybe it just because I grew up watching horror movies on TV or episodes of Star Trek where they're the original one, where there's some really bad people, or maybe it's just because Halloween is coming up and the days are getting shorter and the nights are getting longer. But it is something I tend to think about this time of year. And it seems to me, as a theologian, the real mystery of theology is not really the nature of God. God is love. The real mystery of theology is, where does wickedness come from? And why do God's creatures stray so far from this plain path of joy and of light and of love? Where does it come from? And how do we get sucked in? The tradition talks about the devil, talks about this satanic figure, talks about this secondary god of evil that tempts us and works on us. I have to say, I'm not a big fan of that explanation. I don't think it makes a lot of sense. No, I think that the way we have to begin to try to make sense of the brokenness of our world is with ourselves. The paradox, of course, as I mentioned last week, is that none of us really is individually evil. Yes, we're broken. Yes, we're confused. Yes, we make mistakes, and we make willful mistakes, of course, from time to time. But it's that paradox that I mentioned last week of the moral person, but the immoral society that somehow we collaborate to create. Yes, we're broken. Yes, we're mistaken. Yes, we get stuck in our own idolatries and mistaken loyalties. But it doesn't become evil until we get together, when our mistakes collaborate with each other, when our broken places line up like magnets and snap into place. I don't want to kill the ecosystem, of course not. I just like driving my car. And it's hard, even in Chicago, I've lived without a car, and in many ways it's easier to have a car than not to have a car, even in a city like Chicago. So you can only imagine what it's like in most places. I like to drive my car. You like to drive your cars, those of you who have them. A few other people kind of like their cars. So shouldn't there be roads? Shouldn't there be cheap gas? Shouldn't there be city planning for car drivers? Shouldn't there be an interstate highway system? And pretty soon, we have air pollution, we have petroleum dictatorships, some of the worst governments around the world. We have created as vile and as dangerous a web of evil to threaten life on this planet as we could imagine. Bunch of people who just like driving their cars. It's not my fault. It's not your fault. But of course, it's our fault, collectively, somehow. But I never feel like I ever had a choice. I didn't get to vote on these decisions that were made 50 years ago, 75 years ago, 100 years ago. Things get systematic and they get coercive, and we get like we're bought into them. So we participate even though we don't ever feel like we had an option to opt out. If I wanted to actually improve the prospects of our ecosystem on this world, I would have to convince all of you and everyone else I know and everyone else I don't know to join me. We'd have to do it together. because there's no way I can do it by myself. That's what the author of Ephesians is talking about, this system of coercion that both forces us into the wickedness of the world, but also depends on us. We get so fixated on thinking about enemies of flesh and blood. He says very clearly, be strong in the Lord and put on the whole armor of God so that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. He talks about it. For our struggle is not against enemies of blood and flesh, but against the rulers. He uses all these very amazingly highfalutin Greek words. The powers that be, the kings on their thrones, and he means heavenly thrones, thrones in the sky places. The powers and the principalities, the cosmic powers of the present darkness, he says. He calls them spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places. We get fixated on enemies of flesh and blood, on the outrages of particular political candidates, for example, or on the misdeeds of certain corporate CEOs, or on violence of lone offenders and lone wolves and lone gunmen in isolated cells. We get fixated on the enemies of flesh and blood. And we miss, then, how systematic it all can become, how predetermined, how coercive, how whatever enemy of the flesh and the blood that you can imagine, how we have participated in empowering that enemy, that candidate, that corporate bad actor, that violence somewhere else. We had a hand in that, too. We all did. We breathed the same air that oxygenated that fire. We drink the same water. We swim in the same waters that nourished and nurtured those animosities. And according to the book of Ephesians, until we recognize this, the spiritual component, the component that goes beyond flesh and blood, we will be unprepared for the struggle that we face. For our enemies are not flesh and blood, but spiritual rulerships, unpersonal, systematic authorities, cosmic powers of darkness that we're all part of, and that we sustain and strengthen simply by living in this culture that they feed off. Some days it makes me want to go live out in the woods. I have some friends who live in Goshen, Indiana. I go there and see the Amish and the buggies, and there's a part of me that would love to just withdraw, get off the grid, go live that life, to be pure and to wash my hands of it all. But of course, purity is a fantasy of the system itself. And the dream of purity is a tool that the rulers use against us. So according to the book of Ephesians, of course, the answer is not to withdraw, but to engage, to arm yourself, the book says, prepare to resist, that we have to be strong, we have to be prepared. We even have to be fierce in resisting these powers and these principalities, in denying these systems so much of a claim on our lives, in demanding a better and more godly world together. It uses this amazing metaphor of the armed soldier. I don't like how violent it is, how warlike it is, but it's very clever. The belt of truth you have to put on, and the breastplate of righteousness, the shoes of the gospel of faith and of peace, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation you put on, and wield the sword of the Spirit. I don't like the militaristic angle on that, and I also don't like how individualistic it seems. I'm supposed to put on my armor, you're supposed to put on your armor, like we're lone ronin, lone warriors, justice fighters, the lone ranger on the countryside. We're supposed to be working together is the point of the book of Ephesians. The whole rest of the book, he talks about, the author, about how we have to come together, about we have to break down the walls of separation between us. The book of Ephesians is a book about community. And so when he says, resist the wiles of that spirit, resist those powers and those principalities that unthinking human culture has raised up, become a thinking human culture, a faithful human culture, a united human culture, and resist. Because the walls that separate you are the chief tools of the powers and the principalities. And once those walls are broken down, once we come together truly and soulfully and bear our hearts to each other with vulnerability and with strength, that's when those powers and those principalities begin to lose their claim. That's the gospel answer. That's the Ephesians answer. That's the Jesus answer to the question of separation, to the question of this systematic organization of our worst urges against us, is to consciously, faithfully unite. The way to resist coercion is union. Togetherness in prayer, togetherness in worship, togetherness in action. That's how we resist. We resist the hateful candidate by naming not just the candidate, but the hate, and uniting to purge hate from our culture, from our hearts, and from the hearts of our city and the hearts of the people we meet. We resist the culture of waste and pollution by working together to live cleanly and demand environmental justice for all of God's children, not just the ones who live in relatively clean places like the United States, but the ones who live all around the world, the ones who are facing the worst effects of global warming. We resist separation by not being separated, by breaking down those walls. Spiritual rulers require spiritual resistance, our spiritual resistance, our spiritual togetherness. Like I said, our vulnerability, our commitment to each other. And it seems to me it's a great message for this day when we celebrate communion. Because the powers and the principalities have their rituals of violence, rituals of oppression and of exclusion. We all can imagine what those are. We've all seen them. Every time you turn on the news, you see enacted again more rituals of separation, more rituals of keeping people away. Just think about every time one of these young black men gets shot in the street, it's become a ritual. We need our rituals of faith, too. The ritual of claiming our togetherness, the ritual of refusing to buy in to those stories that we're told, the ritual of all of us coming together and eating the same meal at the same table. The powers and the principalities seek to coerce us at every turn to buy into that agenda, to live in our own little silos. That's why it's so good when we come together as a church, because that's our act of resistance, or the beginning of it, that we celebrate not separation, not the coercion that we experience, but we celebrate communion together. Amen.